You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, April the 24th, and Damian freaking Lillard, my word. But this is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word. I told you I'd be here throughout the NBA offseason, or the Pistons offseason, I should say. And here's me proving that to be just the facts about what's coming up here for the next few months. But today we're going to be running down the action from Tuesday night's NBA playoffs, including one of the craziest endings to a series that you will ever see in your entire life. We're also going to hear from Blake Griffin from the season-ending press conferences at the locker room cleanouts on Tuesday at the Palace Practice Facility. I guess that's the last time that the team will congregate at the Palace Practice Facility, in theory, as the new facility down in the new center area in Detroit is supposed to be opening up by the time next training camp comes around. But we're also going to look ahead to tonight's playoff action across the NBA as well. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and give us a follow on Facebook at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook as well. But hey, I went a little bit of viral on Tuesday, not for anything I did, but Blake Griffin, after the interview that we're going to play snippets of for you here in a little bit here on the show, Blake, in his very decent way, finished up and went around the room and gave a handshake to every member of the media that was there to close the season with a little bit of a press conference there. There was probably, I don't know, about 15 of us in that room when you include some of the print folks that were there, some of the people from the Pistons, and also some of the camera folks for the TV stations as well. So he took our questions and then went down the line and shake everyone's hand. WDIV Channel 4 was still kind of rolling from the interviews that he was doing, which they were taping while he was doing this handshake with everyone, and they went ahead and put it up on social media, and went around everywhere. I've seen Bleacher Report has it, a couple of basketball websites as well, and I was the last one that he ended up shaking hands with, so it was kind of like you could get the best view of me there as he closed up in the interview room. And, you know, Blake and I had a quick word with each other. I've talked to him and interviewed him a few times throughout the year, so it's not like I'm as, you know, big or close of a relationship professional-wise that, you know, the Vince Ellis's and Rod Beards and James Edwards III's and Keith Langlois of the worlds would have with him. But, you know, certainly he has seen me around and vice versa and whatnot there. But and again, I want to preface this by saying, like, I really like Blake Griffin. If you listen to this show, you know that. I like that he's like an athlete with a sense of humor. I like that when you ask him a question, he kind of takes a second to think of what a thoughtful answer would be. He's honest in his assessments, effusive in his praise of his teammates, all the stuff that you'd want out of a player in terms of his relationship if you're a media member here in town. But I will say, apart from this, in some ways, Blake was kind of just praised for the decency that he had in terms of giving a few schleps like us the time of day for a handshake. But I'll say this, isn't it kind of crazy that for an athlete to get praised, or maybe probably anybody in the public eye like that, you just do something that's like kind of fairly common decency, and everyone's just like, wow, what a great guy. What an amazing gesture for that guy to give a handshake. Now, and this is, again, I know this sounds like I'm criticizing Blake. It is not at all what I mean. I thought it was a gesture that was very kind, very nice, and, you know, a little bit above and beyond of what one might expect from an athlete. But to act like this is like the most great gesture in the world kind of says where we're at in terms of our expectations for some of these guys. The bar is just so low that makes him look like Mother Teresa or something like that. Again, I appreciate it. I like Blake. I think he's been a warrior for this team for a season and a half, and all that stuff. But just, I just thought it was kind of funny that it was like, here's how it shows how great of a guy Blake Griffin is because he's treating the media like human beings for a while. And he treats us great and treats us well, usually. But I just thought that was kind of funny. So, what was interesting to me is, and by the way, as I kind of mentioned, maybe the humble brag segment of this show, which has kind of been going on for the last few days during these playoffs, I've had the fortunate luck to be able to cover the league for the Detroit News and the Associated Press, and also a bunch of other Detroit sports, as you guys know, that I talk about and pass along on social media all the time as well. In addition to that, the great fortune of having outstanding seats for games 3 and 4 of the playoffs against Milwaukee as a fan, having some drinks with some friends, just an amazing couple of games there. And I know that, again, fortunate to be able to have those opportunities in my life, and thankful to listener Sean once again for coming through with those tickets, a couple times this season here. But we were kind of by the Pistons bench during game 4. And if you would have known to be looking for me, you would have easily seen me in several shots when they're showing Dwayne Casey or when Blake Griffin gets his ovation. You can see me actually going along with the crowd and giving a standing ovation for Blake as well. And I got a couple of screenshots of their TVs of friends that didn't even know that I was there, that sent pictures of me and said, I can see you at the game, and you know, you're famous and stuff like that. And then from this episode that happened on Tuesday with this viral video of Blake shaking all of our hands, I just got so many texts from people, Twitter, all that good stuff, where people that I don't even recognize their phone numbers because I might have erased it from previous iterations of life. All the group texts that I'm in, someone's putting a picture up there. I didn't show it to anyone, but people are seeing the WDIV video and putting it up and texting me about it. The best one, by the way, that I got in a group chat was the screenshot of me and Blake shaking hands, and the caption was "True Detective Season 4." So I was pretty excited about that. That was the best text I got there. But my point is that I was on I don't know if it even got to TV, to be honest, but I know that it went around the internet, obviously. And I'm like getting all these texts about it. And I'm like, guys, I've been writing 1A stories for the Detroit News for like a year. And I host the damn number one Pistons daily podcast that you could possibly listen to day in and day out. And they're acting like I've now become some level of fame. And I'm not saying that I was at a high level of fame before, but it's not like being on TV for a few seconds or going around the internet on some video for a few seconds doesn't mean that I've made it or something. It's weird. It just kind of hammers home that people just do not care about newspapers anymore. And I know that, and it's in my heart, or I guess it's in my head, but it hasn't reached my heart yet, that people just don't care about the fact that you're writing newspaper articles about professional sports teams and writing deadline stories for wire services that go across the world and all that good stuff. But it just kind of hammered home that point that maybe newspapers won't be the thing that'll be my lifeblood for the rest of my life. So here I am on the podcast, and spread the word so your boy can be employed for the rest of his a life here. But you get on TV one time and people go nuts. Just like I said, I guess there's a lesson there that's when people think that you've made it. But speaking of making it, how about Tuesday night, Dame Lillard, cold-blooded from 37 feet at the buzzer, an unbelievable game, 118 to 115. Not only was it the game winner, not only was it the series winner, but it was the shot that put him at 50 points for the game. The celebration at the Moda Center was completely crazy. The still reaction of Dame Lillard while he's in the pile that everyone's celebrating is just an unbelievable photo there. You'll see it. If you haven't seen it yet, if you haven't seen the video, if you haven't seen the photos, you really need to. It needs to be seen to be believed. I literally stood up and did a goofy dance right after he made that three, and I don't get up for much after midnight. I'll tell you that right now. And you guys know, if you listen to the show, how much I sports dislike Russell Westbrook. So he had an outstanding game, 29 for Russ, 14 assists and 11 rebounds. He was really good, but settles for jumpers too much in the clutch. Newsflash there, I know, but 36 points for Paul George and 9 rebounds. Three straight first-round playoff exits for the Oklahoma City Thunder in this one. Always good to see Russ fall flat on his face for me. But hey, if you wanted to mix it up and get on the trade machine and think about a team that might be a willing partner for a trade, if you're a Pistons fan who wants to do a little bit of a rebuild or a retool Maybe you got Blake Griffin with his high value after the strong season that he's had in your sights as a player that could be traded, or maybe you've had enough of the Reggie Jackson, although I don't think he's going to be ended up getting traded to Oklahoma City, possibly a three-way deal, or maybe even Andre Drummond or Steven Adams gets moved for one of those guys in a three-way deal. Go ahead, get on that trade machine and see if there's a way that you can maybe come up with something good. Send them along my way. I'll let you know what I think. Maybe pass some of those along as well. But there was three other games on Tuesday night, obviously a lot less exciting, but the Raptors closed out the Magic easily. Five-game series win there. Same for the Sixers, who closed out the Nets in five. I told you not to panic on that one. The Sixers beat the Nets there. And Denver takes a 3-2 lead on San Antonio. That series will continue. Game six going back to the Lone Star State there. But up next, we're going to hear from Blake Griffin from the locker room cleanup day before me and him had that special moment at the end of his press conference. But you can get Locked on Pistons on the brand new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, for God's sake, go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked on Pistons.
Yes, sir!
So, Blake, tell us about the foundation you guys put down here in Kings' first year coaching the Pistons.
You know, it's like a little bit bittersweet. You know, the ending obviously is not what we wanted. But I think every year, you know, God, people always say I'm proud of this group, blah, blah, blah. But I really do feel like a sense of pride of this group for just the journey that we were on together. You know, wins and losses ultimately tell one story, but I think the way that the season played out and how we handled certain things and how we kind of grew as a team was special to me. I've been fortunate to be on some great teams, and this year was a lot of fun. Like I really enjoyed this group of guys and enjoyed, you know, going to battle with these guys, and I think that's part of it. You build a culture where guys are genuinely happy for each other, they're rooting for each other, they're doing whatever it takes, and it's not necessarily something that might not be something that they want to do, but it's something that they know they need to do, and they do it, and they don't complain about it, and that's special.
To piggyback off that, how important is that aspect of like professional sports for you at this point in your career? Obviously, everybody wants to win, mm-hmm. but to at least be in an environment where you enjoy being there and around being the guys, is that maybe more important now than it was earlier in your career?
Yeah, it's very important. I think early in your career, you just don't realize, you know, what could happen or what might happen, or you sort of take teams and seasons for granted. I've been on some teams with a lot of talent and a lot of potential and a lot of expectations, and ultimately didn't reach those. But I don't take for granted, you know, being around a group of guys that are. Are the way we are, or the way we were this season. It was, like I said, it was special, and I said that to the guys last night, and I hope like our rookies and you know Luke and guys like that realize that, because you know, nothing's guaranteed, and you might not get a chance to be on a team that you know, you genuinely enjoy being around everybody and rooting for everybody.
Obviously, the knee became a storyline toward the end of the season. What's the next step there? Is it rest? Is there any other procedure, anything that needs to be done on it?
I'll kind of address that, you know, probably the rest of today and tomorrow, and you know, have a game plan going from here. But yeah, it'll be something. Yeah.
Dwayne, do you expect it to limit your beginning of your off season? I guess. Workout and preparation for next year.
I would say no. I mean, I'd take some time off.
Anyway,
so I don't. You know, it's not like I don't anticipate not being able to get on the court till, you know, July or June. You know, whatever it is, I don't think it'll interfere with any off season, you know, workout plans that I have. But like I said, we'll kind of figure that out.
Dwayne gave the impression last night that you had fought through this for a while. You came home off the West Coast trip, played against Portland or against Orlando, and then Portland game was two nights later. What, had the knee been bothering you before that Orlando game, or can you just give us an idea of when it cropped up, maybe?
No, I think Orlando was I mean, other than just regular, you know, game 70 or whatever it was, you know, dealing with you know, the regular wear and tear of the regular season. But Orlando is kind of when it really started.
You had, well, as long as you've been in the league, Dwayne has been coaching on the other conference most mm-hmm. of that time, so you'd only see Toronto twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you've had a full season under him, what did you come to know about him that maybe you didn't know from afar?
I felt like I had a good idea of Coach Casey. You know, Coach Casey was up for the Clippers job after my first season. I wasn't playing, so before my second rookie season. He was up for the job, and I was really pulling for him to get the job at the time. You know, he don't have much pull as a rookie, but and we ultimately went with Vinny. But, you know, gathering information about him then, and then gathering information, you know, not necessarily gathering information, but just talking to people. To last summer, you hear the same thing, and that's I think that's a really positive thing. Consistency, and one thing that everybody talks about with Coach Casey is the type of person he is. You know, great guy, very disciplined, and cares about his players. And I saw that through the course of the season. You know, ups and downs, and the way things ended in Toronto for him, you know, was unfortunate. But I mean, we are very, very lucky to have a coach like him. And have a coach, you know, who stands for and represents the things he does. He was great this season, and you know, I've really, really enjoyed playing for him and his staff. He put together really, really good staff.
Being at an all NBA level now, you do have a little bit more pull with this ownership front office group. Do you have ideas that you might pass along and say this is what you see from your perspective, or ways that you might be able to improve, or they might be able to improve this year?
You know, as a player, like, I remember kind of talking to some vets early on, and you know, I play. You know, I'm not here to make decisions in the front office. Ed and all those guys, they do a really good job. You know, in the short time that I've known them as well, they have plans. They have an idea. They have a direction. It might not happen overnight because of the situation, but they have a great grasp on that. If they ask my opinion, I'll of course give my honest opinion. But I've never really been the type of player to go in and make demands, because just because sometimes as players, and you know, you see from coaches too, we're all about now, winning right now, which is obviously very important, but not at the expense of, you know, the next year or however that may be.
But just in the sense that they're building this whole thing around the timeline of your contract, that it seems like there's some give and take, and they want to see what types of things you see that the roster needs, or the construction, or maybe offensive things, or anything
sure.
like that. That,
sure.
that there's that relationship there with it being around your contract.
Yeah, and I think I think they have a good grasp on that. They're, like I said, there is a plan. From day one, you know, they've set a plan in motion. And sometimes you have to tweak and you have to change things, and things happen. But I fully trust their leadership and their direction.
Blake, one of the things that Stan Van Gundy and other coaches have told me in the past, players know, like, they know you can't fool them. They mm-hmm. they know when they're being mm-hmm. coached well. They mm-hmm. understand all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the Toronto game, first Toronto game, as a moment that kind of crystallized your relationship with Casey. Just walk us through that. What was so important, or how he responded, or how he was comporting himself going into that game? Obviously, when you knew his emotions had to be
right,
going
right,
rumbling
right,
through.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, from my early conversations, you can tell the type of coach that Coach Casey was. But to me, there's always a point in the season when a coach goes one way or the other with the team. And I don't know that Toronto was it for everybody, but I guarantee you there was probably a point throughout the season for everybody that that happened. And for me, one of those moments, like I said, was Toronto. I mean, he came in, he said the right things, and his approach is not that, like, it's hard, man. And being in this position this season, going back to a place, it's hard not to let your emotions affect you. Like, you can say all the right things, but it's hard because of how much you care and relationships and all that. And he didn't let that affect him. You know, even when we were down 20 at halftime or whatever we were down at halftime, you know, came in, we talked about the right things. And I just remember thinking back after that, you know, that he handled that situation so well. That's a moment where you gain more respect for somebody.
Did it help you? I'm sorry, did it help you when you went back to L.A. later on in the year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of had this, like, thing. It was kind of a joke, but, like, the revenge games, you know, going back and playing your old teams. You know, we played Golden State the first time we beat them, and Toronto. We went back to Memphis, you know, Jim Scholl, our trainer. So we had, like, this whole, like, running joke anywhere from everybody, you know what I mean? It could be whoever it was, you know, like an intern. But the revenge game was a thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's we seemed to really, like, respond well. And, guys, I know we all wanted to play, you know, that way for Coach Casey going back to Toronto. And I felt that from guys when we played, when we went back to the Clippers. And, you know, that means something. That means something to you.
Individually, can you put into context how satisfying this season was for you, just to 75 games? The evolution of your game, even though it's dated back to last year, mm-hmm. it seemed like it kind of took off nationally to lead a team into the playoffs. I know you had goals of proving people wrong this season. Do you feel like you walk away happy knowing that what you've done and the progression you've made as a player?
You walk away, I don't know if happy is like my necessary, my personal emotion, but proud, I think, is of this team and of everything. I mean, you know, for several years, I heard a lot of negativity, and didn't necessarily believe it or buy into it or anything like that, but I don't care what you do or who you are or how resilient you are as a person, it wears on you and it affects you. And, you know, yeah, this year has kind of helped me, you know, quiet that down for myself, you know, I always believe in myself, but it's always nice to, you know, come out and put together a season or put together a stretch of you know, the things you've been working on and the things that you've been told you couldn't do for a long time. So, yeah, this season it's the foundation, you know.
When last season ended, when we were here on the day after, Stan Van Gundy said that he expected you, with that comfort level now after having mm-hmm. been here a few months, mm-hmm. would become the leader. And I know maybe that wasn't with the Clippers, with some of the personalities there, with Chris Paul around, maybe you were never the unquestioned leader of that team. Did you, going back to Oklahoma, you were so young, I don't know that you would have been there either. Did you learn anything about yourself this year, and was it personally satisfying to be able to kind of settle into that role where your leadership was accepted and you embraced it?
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody has their own style of leadership, and I remember, you know, early on in my career, as I was trying to establish myself and find my way as a leader, I remember having a conversation with Tim Duncan in the summer. I can't remember exactly what summer it was, but one thing that he said that stuck out to me was, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter, you know, how you do it. You don't have to be the guy that beats your chest or yells the loudest or talks the most in the huddle. Being a leader is, at the end of the game, that guy that everybody looks at and like, yeah, we're following that guy, you know? And that's always stuck with me because I'm not like the most like talkative person. I don't, you know, have like a way with words like some guys do. But knowing and hearing those words then, and then, you know, trying to do that and trying to find my own way, and then now kind of being able to do that and feel like you're being somewhat effective is a little bit more rewarding, for sure.
About the read and react workouts that you did last summer, do you anticipate basically just more of the same, or is there something else that you think can be layered onto that too?
Yeah, I'll do a similar setup this summer. Tweaking some stuff, you know, I shot, I don't know how many threes off the dribble this year. Didn't necessarily anticipate shooting that many. So I'll work a lot, you know, ball handling in the pick and roll, ball handling, you know, taking care of the ball in different situations will be big for me this summer, continuing to work on my shot. And then, yeah, a lot of read and react stuff, you know, because that's, you know, how we play. It's really nice going into this offseason knowing our offense, knowing our coaches, knowing our players a little bit better. I just feel a lot more comfortable. I feel like I can kind of fine-tune some of the stuff to you know, improve on you know, all the areas that I need to improve on.
Thanks,
guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you guys. Yep.
Well, thanks again to Blake Griffin there before the break from the season-ending locker room cleanup press conferences that we had. And thanks for making me go viral with you, I guess, on Tuesday as well, Blake. But another dog night to look forward to, kind of like the Pistons' final game on Monday when they got the sweep completed by the Milwaukee Bucks 4-0 there on Monday. But Wednesday night, tonight's games, not so good. A couple of teams that are probably going to close it out at home as they get ready to play each other in the second round of the Western Conference playoffs. That's right. The Jazz are going to be at Houston and fully expect Houston to take that one. They're 8-point favorites at home in Houston there. And then the nightcap at 10:30 is the Clippers at the Warriors. Of course, we expect the Warriors to close that series out in 5 games as well. Not seeing a line for this game yet, so maybe there's some injury complications. I'm not going to even look that up because I'm not really into this series right now. But this second round across the NBA is going to be very interesting. We're going to watch all those games. We're going to cover all those games as we talk about the Pistons, kind of mixed in and threaded in with the NBA playoffs as they continue as well. 8 o'clock on that Jazz-Rockets game tonight. Another TNT night, of course. Kenny and Charles and Shaq and Ernie driving the bus for you guys tonight on the NBA playoff action as well. So thanks again to you guys for listening. Appreciate the love. And by the way, a little programming note, we will have a Thursday show, but we're going to not have a Friday show this week. There will be times throughout the offseason, most times, more times than not, that we're going to turn this into a 4-day-a-week show, and there's going to be times there's going to be a 3-day-a-week show as well. So I'll kind of try to keep you in the loop as much as I can, but I just have a lot going on Thursday and then into Friday as well. So probably just don't expect a Friday podcast this week, but we'll come up with one on Thursday, and we'll send you into the weekend that way. So this is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying thanks to you guys for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. And enjoy the games tonight. Talk to you guys tomorrow.